Hello everyone, I'm Padmini Arhant, representative, Divine Mission, author and presenter, PadminiArhant.com. Welcome to the topic, Syrian conflict. United Nations Security Council arrived at unanimous decision yesterday to wage war against Daesh Takfiri network. Nothing happens without a cause. And that applies to terrorism or any event anywhere in the world. Let us reflect on how Daesh Takfiri emerged in the first place. Did the world hear about Daesh Takfiri 5 or 6 years ago? Not at all. Daesh Takfiri is a recent evolution. And how did they and where did they come from? Syrian conflict that began in March 2011 was a premeditated plan. The architects behind Project for New American Century, they were also masterminds behind 9/11 attack in 2001 in the United States, using 9/11 as the pretext. The Project for New American Century propelled invading Afghanistan, subsequently Iraq, and there were other nations that were in the target list, and Syria was one of them. So accordingly, the conflict in Syria began in 2011, taking advantage of the so-called Arab Spring. I'm sure you recall the Arab Spring throughout Middle East. In that course, the proponents, the architects, and those who engineered Project for New American Century, they had decided that that was the prime time for them to intervene and implement their agenda. And they did. What did they do? They deployed terror networks, for they knew that there would be absolutely no support from the public given the revelations on Iraq war, and for that matter, Afghanistan as well. Iraq in particular, given the fact that Iraq war was an illegal invasion and occupation of that country, using false pretext, Iraq was invaded, and Iraq and the people in Iraq are still paying the price until today. Syria was targeted in accordance with the planned mission, that is the Project for New American Century. They felt, the architects and those who are still engaged in destabilization of Syria and other target nations in their list, they felt that it was extremely difficult for them to have the military invasion of Syria. Like I just said, having been caught with the Iraq's exposure, that is, Iraq war was illegal from the word go, and I would apply the same with Afghanistan as well. Nevertheless, what I would like to just say that is that they just bypassed military involvement in Syria, for that would have become too obvious, and they did not want to deal with public protest in the domestic front and demonstrations worldwide. So they decided that they would deploy terror networks instead and implement premeditated plan to destabilize Syria. Terror networks, Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda that was again created by none other than those who are aimed at maintaining supremacy, global supremacy. They created Al-Qaeda. Western powers, United States, Britain, and their Western allies, along with their partners in the Middle East and elsewhere. Al-Qaeda, having been created by them, Al-Qaeda has been extremely convenient in terms of convincing the world that there is this terror network that United States and allies have to continuously confront with, and there has to be this perpetual warfare that needs to be waged against the terror group. That is why they came up with this war on terror. And the Syrian conflict, with the relocation of Al-Qaeda from Afghanistan and Pakistan, but primarily Afghanistan, they were relocated to Syria in the Middle East. You know, Al-Qaeda and any other terror networks were nowhere to be seen in Syria, Iraq, or elsewhere in the Middle East, by the way. And Al-Qaeda's arrival in the Middle East began with the conflict in Libya, by the way. Libya that was destabilized, and then they were able to create these militancy and this terror groups. This was all in preparation to move ahead with their plan against Syria. So they had the terror groups stationed in Libya, and then Libya having been destabilized, the militants and the terror operatives hired by United States and other Western powers, along with their allies in the Middle East, especially Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Jordan, and of course Turkey came along afterwards. But nonetheless, you know, their allies had an active role in creating this weapons cache in Libya prior to moving towards Syria. So as Libya was destabilized and terror networks were in place and having easier access to all the ammunitions in Libya, and then they were relocated to Syria, and Al-Qaeda was representing the proponents of this project for New American Century. So Al-Qaeda was funded, armed, and they had training, and the training was provided in Jordan by CIA, Mossad, and the other MI5, MI6 intelligence sources, and their extensive involvement. And then Saudi Arabia actively engaged in promoting and directly involved in weapons delivery to Al-Qaeda. And this was essentially the terror networks that were representing the Western powers and their allies in the Middle East to destabilize Syria. And the people in Syria. When we try and focus on how all these various terror networks came about, one has to understand that Al-Qaeda, in return, it branched into different networks. Initially, there was this terror network called Al-Nusra Front. An offshoot of Al-Qaeda emerged, and then Al-Nusra Front. From Al-Nusra Front, there was this ISIL, Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, because by then the conflict, Syrian conflict, has been prolonged, and there has been a spillover effect in Iraq. So now the conflict spread from Syria into Iraq, and this was not a coincidence, by the way. This is what that was expected, and this is what that was desired by those who wanted to achieve their goals, and that was to destabilize nations as per their previous plan, this project for New American Century. Iraq, this terror network, ISIL, Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, and from there, then there another terror network was created, and that was this ISIS. Now this time it is Islamic State of Iraq and Syria. So that became, ISIL became ISIS. And from ISIS, now they have this Daesh Takfiri. There was also the Salafis. But then, so having created this terror grid, that I see that this whole operation is a grid, a terror grid, by Western powers and their allies. They have relentlessly provided weapons. There has been millions of dollars that has been authorized to train these terror operatives. And then, as I just mentioned, they've also been periodically given all the necessary training, and there has been logistic support as well. And then they were able to convince other nations in that region, in the Middle East, and there has been this cooperation from others as well, like United Arab Emirates and Kuwait, and besides their regular and known allies like Saudi Arabia, Israel, Qatar, Jordan. But then Turkey became an active promoter of terrorism, especially in the Syrian conflict. Turkish leadership and government, led by earlier Prime Minister, now having become the President, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and the ex-Foreign Minister turned now Prime Minister Davutoglu, under their leaderships, Turkey has been involved in the Syrian conflict. Again, you know, Turkey has also experienced a severe blowback as a result of their engagement in Syrian conflict. So this is the synopsis for you, you know, on Syrian conflict. And, you know, Al-Qaeda was relocated to Syria at the beginning of the conflict, and then Al-Qaeda in return evolved into these various terror networks that I just mentioned, Al-Nusra Front, ISIL, ISIS, and now what they're called, Daesh, Takfiri network. You know, as the day goes by and as they keep extending this conflict in Syria, they keep inventing new names for the same terror network, who are none other than the Al-Qaeda that they founded and created and continue to maintain Al-Qaeda for their agenda. Daesh Takfiri, now as they are called, has become the enemy, and interestingly, you know, those who were behind the creation of this terror network, regarding their own creation as their enemy now, but at the same time, unwilling to even, you know, review their actions. And in the past, that is since the beginning of the Syrian conflict and up until now, and at the same time, they they just simply refuse to change course in terms of cutting off the weapon supply to these to the terror network that they now recognize as their enemy. I mean, can you see the irony here? You know, on the one hand, United States, Britain, France, and you know, their other Western allies, including their coalition in the Middle East, who have been actively engaged and directly responsible for nearly 250,000, and this is just an official figure. I'm sure the unofficial figure in terms of the loss of lives in Syria is much more. And and then 250,000 or more people have died in the Syrian conflict, and then millions of the people in that from that nation now rendered refugees. Okay, they have the refugee status, and that again is a topic that merits own discussion, which I will talk about it in due course. Meanwhile, I would like to shed light on this dilemma and what I see as this hegemony's self-contradiction. You know, they are always in paradoxical mode that they appear to just simply ignore. At the same time, you know, when they convene these emergency meetings at United Nations Security Council, obviously, you know, following the terror attacks in Paris last week, and that has prompted them to, you know, hold this meeting at United Nations Security Council, and they have apparently arrived at a unanimous decision to wage war against Daesh Takfiri terror network, which I emphasize that they created, and they are they continue to fund, arm, and train these terror networks as I speak right now. So one should, I think it would only be reasonable to raise this question to them, you know, what exactly are they planning to do now, you know, having maintained this continuous bombing and shelling of that nation, Syria, you know, whatever they declared at the United Nations Security Council, that how thousands have died, which is true. You know, as I just mentioned, 250,000 is just an official disclosure. Unofficially, I am fairly certain that the figure is much higher than that. And then a million, more than million Syrian citizens are refugees, wandering, you know, wherever they can, you know, find a shelter. And many in the process are also losing their lives, by the way, and especially children and women, you know, when they are trying to arrive on the European shores, you know, they are going through, they are obviously risking their lives and trying to, you know, find some form of asylum there. But again, when the members at the UN Security Council described about the devastation from the Syrian conflict, I hope there was some element of integrity that should have allowed them to reflect on their actions, considering that they are the ones who were responsible for this conflict. And then even when the conflict has been in progress only, you know, accelerated at a much higher rate, for, you know, no matter how many people died and how many terror networks they deployed, you know, evolving under different names, they were never satisfied. For they felt that, you know, they had to accomplish their mission, and that mission is to make Syria a failed state, you know, literally unlivable, you know, uninhabitable, and again driving the natives, the population of that country away from their homeland, forcing this refugee status on them. Still, they are not content, by the way. So where does it stand? As I just said, you know, this this whole the reason that has been stated at the UN Security Council for their so-called unanimous decision, you know, all those reasons directly apply to them. That is the scores of deaths in the Syrian conflict, the millions who have been rendered refugees, the wiping out of the civilization of Syria, and direct and demolition of you know, Syrian infrastructure, everything that they have done all these years. It's been almost going to be 5 years in March next year, but then 4.5 years since the conflict began. And yes, you know, the deaths and destruction that has been imposed upon the people in Syria, which obviously were, you know, elaborated at the UN Security Council, conveniently forgetting that they are the ones who were actually responsible. You know, human nature is that whenever anything goes right, there appears to be no qualms, no inhibition in claiming credit right away. Even it's so the current trend, by the way, is whether or not they have done anything in terms of any positive contribution, you know, they are there in the front line to claim credit on anything. But then anything that they have been directly involved with, death, destruction, decimation, annihilation, you know, and having done all that, there is no way that they want to acknowledge any responsibility. Isn't that convenient? That is the contemporary trend in politics. And so when it comes to credit and glory, whether they have done anything or not, they are more than happy and, you know, willing to accept all that and take away all that. But then when it comes to any of the mistakes, blunders that they commit time and time again, conscientiously, willfully, and enthusiastically, they have been involved in creating this catastrophe in Syria, and that goes for the entire region in the Middle East, and now the world is paying the price as a result. You know, and so they don't want to be any part of it, and you know, they want to absolve themselves of any responsibility. Again, you know, it is least surprising to me. So when we talk about this United Nations Security Council decision to wage war against Daesh Takfiri, you know, as I mentioned earlier, and I have maintained this all along, that the Syrian conflict, if this Syrian conflict were to be brought to an end, if there if there has been peace accord peace accords that were scheduled since the conflict began in Syria. But then, you know, the peace accord, Geneva peace accord on Syrian conflict, was only to they only gathered to disagree. They agreed to disagree on the subject of ending this conflict in Syria. And again, you know, this is why I say, if there were to be any genuine concern among those who are responsible for this entire Syrian warfare, you know, they would have done everything in their power. By the way, they claim themselves to be the superpower and advanced nations and what have you. But then when it comes to peaceful agreement, you know, they obviously, their true colors are revealed. And then, you know, you find out where exactly, what exactly their position is. And that has been abundantly clear when it comes to Syrian warfare. The peace accord, Geneva peace accord on Syrian conflict, if there were an agreement, a consensus to end the warfare back in 2012, and then subsequently another summit that was held on Syria, if there were to be this understanding and a sincere commitment, and say that enough lives have been lost, and you know, millions are now becoming refugees, it is getting out of control, let us bring this war to an end, and that would have absolutely sealed the any possibility for terror networks to exist. And and again, as we witness today, wreaking havoc in Europe or anywhere else. But this was not desirable. This is the fact, and I don't think, you know, this can be denied. For, you know, the summits that were held on Syrian conflict, and how the deliberate efforts and attempts were made to only sabotage any peaceful resolution, and to bring the Syrian warfare to an end. What did they not do to make the agreement unsuccessful? That is why I see that this duplicity is just amazing, and this is what I consider hegemony's paradoxical stance. You know how they did with this joint comprehensive action plan for Iran's nuclear program? So much political maneuvering and advocacy and whatnot, and to prove that they really stand for peace and we should avoid military intervention at all cost. Yes, military intervention, not just against Iran, or it should be against any other nation, should be avoided, and the world should work constantly for a peaceful resolution. And when they could exhibit their desire and their political initiatives, to make the JCPOA, as they call it, a Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action on the Iran's nuclear program, why could they not exhibit similar enthusiasm and commitment in bringing the Syrian conflict to an end? On the contrary, the same powers, United States and their allies, whatever they did on the Iran's nuclear program, that goes for EU as well, by the way. EU having been projected as the major peace broker on the JCPOA on Iran's nuclear program, what has been EU's role when it comes to Syrian conflict? I think it is important to shed light on EU's involvement in Syrian conflict. EU, European Union, they lifted arms ban. So there was a weapons ban, ban on weapons supply to terror networks deployed in Syria. What did EU do? They lifted that ban, saying that anyone can supply weapons to terror networks, and EU was also one of them. I don't think there can be any going back. So this happened, and so instead of extending the arms embargo, EU came along and they lifted the ban. In other words, they fueled terror. They promoted terror by lifting the ban on weapon supply to the terror networks, what has become now Daesh Takfiri. Now all of a sudden they are recognized as the Daesh Takfiri is now recognized as Western powers' arch nemesis, when they are the ones who created them. And the other nations' involvement equally contributed to Syrian catastrophe or carnage, and again, exacerbating Syrian people suffering today. And that is Turkey. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, how Turkey has been involved in not just facilitating terror, but basically, inviting these terror networks like Al-Nusra Front, were provided a base in Turkey, and only to, experience, as I just said, a blowback from the same terror networks that they hosted in their country across the Syrian border. And this is Turkish government, not the people, by the way. The people, the Turkish citizens, have been staging protests and demonstrations. But are the governments who are engaged in counterproductive actions today in today's politics, do they really care about people's voice and people's concern? And this is why I pose this question time and time again. How could these governments could even be regarded the government representing the people when they care less about what the citizens of the nation think about their decisions or their policies? They don't really care about it. Even though it's the people who become the targets, or they are the ones who ultimately pay the price for their government's erroneous decisions and their egregious actions, like it has happened with Turkey, and now the citizens of France and the rest of Europe are experiencing right now. So when you engage in anything that is expected to have serious repercussions, I don't think the leaderships and these governments are so naive, that they are so ignorant, that they really do not know what is about to befall on them and their nation, especially their nation. So what does that mean? That they are even willing to commit treason. This is what it is. These are treasonous acts against their own people and their country. Promoting, facilitating, orchestrating, funding terror and terrorism with a guaranteed blowback, which means that the people are the ones who are going to have they are going to be the victims, and that is exactly what has happened in Turkey. So many terror attacks has taken place since Turkey's involvement in Syrian conflict. This is again Turkish leadership and government's own doing, by the way, by mobilizing weapons and as I just said, you know, inviting al-Nusra Front providing all necessary arrangements for these terror operatives to terrorize not only the people in Syria but also their own people in Turkey. Not to mention the Patriot missiles, by the way. The Patriot missiles were also installed in Turkey using the Syrian conflict as the premise, which means that Turkey is now occupied by Germany and other NATO allies, under the pretext of maintenance and monitoring this Patriot missile in Turkey, you know. So this is how this recolonization is also taking place alongside continuing this warfare in Syria. Now, when they say that their enemy is Daesh Takfiri, and at the same time they would not relent in terms of ceasing, in terms of terminating weapons delivery to these terror operatives. And this is continuing unabated through their allies, mainly Saudi Arabia, and as I just said, Turkey, Qatar, Israel, with training that has been provided by Mossad and the terror operatives who were wounded, they have been given all kinds of medical assistance, and they have they are being cared for by Israeli authorities in the occupied Syrian territory, that is the Golan Heights. I don't think there can be any denial, no matter how this all these issues are circumvented by Western powers and their allies, who are directly responsible for the creation of this terror network that is now identified as Daesh Takfiri, that is coming, that is haunting them right now. Daesh Takfiri is now the pretext to continue their bombing of Syria and Iraq. And let me also say another thing, that the air raids in Syria that has been carried out since the beginning of the conflict in that country, those air raids had no authorization from, this is the United States air raids, by the way, United States air raids, or their ally Turkey, for instance, Turkey's reconnaissance flights. There has been, again, you know, incidents on Turkey's reconnaissance flights, basically, you know, this aerial spying that has been taking place, and then there has been incidents in that respect as well. So all of this has been really in direct violation of Syrian sovereignty. There has been no UN authorization on these United States or Turkey's air raids, and that goes for there was Israel's air strikes as well. Israel's airstrikes against, you know, targeted premises in Syria. It was not focused on terror networks. On the other hand, they diligently spared the terror networks operating in Syria, for they are representing the Western powers. And these terror networks were basically, as I said, deployed to wage war against the Syrian government and the people in Syria. Now, when they speak about organizing this UN Security Council authorized war against Daesh Takfiri, my question to them is, this is essentially a war against them, is it not? Having been responsible for the manufacture, nurturing, and strengthening terror networks that has become the Daesh Takfiri, if they are claiming that they are going to wage a war against Daesh Takfiri, that means essentially they are waging a war against them. Unless, you know, this Daesh Takfiri is once again a camouflage. It's a camouflage to continue their bombings in Syria until that nation is no longer visible, even on, you know, in any satellite pictures, and it is no longer seen on even the global map. So perhaps this is their idea. You know, it's just beyond comprehension when they speak about this this whole strategy of going after the terror networks that they are essentially, funding and enabling this terror network to even exist, when this terror network could cease to exist, or right now, this minute, this terror network could be defunct, could become defunct, and they could just finish them if they were to just simply cut off the lifeline, and that is the weapon supply to these terror operatives, which they are not willing to do. So now I'm asking you, the people in the world, what do you make out of this? You know, regardless of how, this propagation in the airwaves and using all kinds of medium at their disposal, information highway or, television and of course, even the entertainment industry for that matter, you know, all that being misused to propagate their views and basically masquerade truth and present everything else except the truth about this mayhem they have created in Syria and what has become now Daesh Takfiri. Why is it that the Western powers and their allies, why are they reluctant? Why there is no, not even any mention about them imposing a ban on weapons supply to these terror operatives? Again, I would like to bring another topic for comparison. For I think it is relevant just to give you an example, in the United States, as many of you out in the world would know, that how United States, gripped with gun violence, and there has been series of incidents, and in fact there is not a month that goes by without at least one or two incident involving gun violence. And again, I attribute this to false flag events, and also there are, there is much more to it that meets the eye. And I have elaborated on this issue of gun violence in the article that I published not long ago. And what I would like to say in this regard is that in the United States, gun control is a hot button issue. And here, the United States government and those who speak about gun violence and how, gun violence is claiming lives, which is true, that, with the events that has been happening, the shooting rampage, especially in the university, the campuses, and, the violence has been almost happening at frequent intervals. But again, I have, as I said, I had discussed in length about why and what is happening and what needs to be done and what could be done in that regard. So I would say that, if you're interested, you can always, go back and refer to the article that I published in this context, and it was called United States Gun Violence, Gun Rights, and Gun Control. Anyways, here the gun control issue, where the initiative is to disarm those who are who have access to assault weapons, right? This is the proposal, that why not disarm, you know, those who are capable of getting involved in the shooting rampage and so on. I mean, one would say, yes, that is sensible, that needs to be done, you know. Accessibility to assault weapons, difficult, in the sense that it has to, they have to comply with the requirement, and that means that any potential buyer, if they're going to acquire assault weapon, there has to be a background check about their medical history, and whether they have any criminal background and so on and so forth. And you know, that kind of requirement is absolutely necessary. So, but then when they're speaking about disarming people, the gun owners in the United States, in order to enforce gun control, and then at the same time, when the United States government and the leaderships, when they refuse to apply the same strategy to terror networks that they are arming with the weapons supplied to them, either directly or indirectly through their allies, is it not a contradictory position adopted by them? And this is what I raise to the leadership and those who are behind such strategy in the United States. When we speak about, you know, gun control in the United States, the proposal that those who have the capability or potential, if they appear to be a threat to citizens' security in the nation, they should be prohibited from having any access to assault weapons. And I absolutely agree in that regard. It goes without saying. I think anyone with the basic or, you know, superior intelligence cannot possibly, you know, disagree in that respect. But then, at the same time, you know, their strategy when it comes to terrorists, terrorists, they want to arm terrorists. But then when it comes to gun control in the United States, they're saying that, you know, we want to disarm. But then, you know, shouldn't the disarmament principle apply across the board when they think that there is an essential and existential threat to citizen security, whether at home or, you know, anywhere in the world? Is it not, you know, defiance of rationale and sensibility when they maintain this paradoxical positions? They are adamant about, you know, their supply to terrorists, the weapon supply to terrorists, and they want that to remain, and if at all it has only accelerated, increased in recent times, and that is what has emboldened these terror networks to, you know, to go around wreaking havoc. So why are they adopting this dual positions conflicting? This is a conflicting position. This is what I see when it comes to, you know, United States policy on gun control at home, and then at the same time, the United States, having no interest to disarm the terrorists, and that is to, you know, terminate any kind of weapons supply reaching the terror networks in Syria, Iraq, or any other location where the terror shelters and terror networks have established their operation. And the other focus is on United States terror, the whole strategy that they maintain, that they they have this selection between moderate terrorists and extremists. And again, how can you have such classification? A moderate terrorist and then there is an extremist. Isn't terrorism in all no matter what kind of no matter whatever level or extent that terrorism is existing, I believe that terrorism is terrorism. You cannot just be classifying that as a moderate terrorism and then there is extremism. When terrorists are their notion, their motive is to kill people indiscriminately, and they really don't have any regrets or remorse, and they want to just go about terrorizing the world. How can there be any categories that are being created? Moderate terrorism and extremism, why not just terrorism is terrorism? And if they fit the definition of terrorism, which is terrorizing innocent civilians and they are involved in destruction of life and property anywhere in the world, they are terrorists. And you cannot just be selective or cherry picking among terror networks and terrorists and trying to justify your actions, and that is to equip the terrorists and the terror networks with all kinds of military hardware and ammunitions, and this is what has become the terror operation that is spreading violence worldwide. When we speak about Daesh, Takfiri terror networks today, as I said, all that the Western powers and their allies need to do, in all honesty, is to refrain, I underscore, refrain from fueling terror. All that they need is to cut off ties with terror groups and disarm these terror networks. That is why I provided this analogy about how this gun control in the United States, the focus is that there has to be disarmament. But then at the same time, the same the policy makers, they seem to have no problem in arming the terror networks that are engaged in harming innocent lives, not only in the conflict zone, but now it has become, any domain has become a fair game for them. With everything, with power comes with responsibility. power cannot just be considered that as a privilege. And of course, there are privileges more than what is deserving, but then that is being availed by those in the position of power and authority. But then, you know, there is they seem to have no objection when it comes to the privileges and the authority that that they claim as the package deal when they're assuming office. But at the same time, I think, you know, responsibility is a big factor that comes along with power. When they are instrumental in the decision-making process, and they are authorizing actions that appears to have serious ramifications, then the onus is on them to accept any responsibility for their involvement, their actions. And this is where, you know, those in the position of power seem to be missing in action. They do not want to claim responsibility, but at the same time, when it comes to, you know, using or misusing their power, that continues, for there is no accountability for anything they do and say when they are part of this hegemony orchestrated or a hegemony planned agenda. In conclusion, what really needs to be understood on this Syrian conflict is there are two ways to bring about peace and end this entire conflict and this conundrum that the world is confronted with right now. And they are, you know, Syrian conflict could be ended with the ceasefire and withdrawal of all kinds of support to terror networks in Syria. This would instantaneously bring this conflict to an end. And then, you know, the other factor is disarmament of the terror networks. So ending the Syrian conflict with ceasefire and terminating all kinds of assistance and support to terror networks and operatives in Syria and Iraq. And the other factor that I just mentioned is complete and comprehensive disarmament of terror networks. And the question is, are they willing to do? And I already know the answer. And the answer is emphatic no. Hegemony agenda. They are fixated. They are obsessed with their mission, no matter what. However this conflict evolves into uncontrollable mayhem in their own at their doorstep, they still believe that they have to continue on their mission. And this is what I consider defiance and despite fait accompli. You can be adamant about certain ways and you know, structures, believing that somehow there would be a miracle and you know, you would prevail. But then, you know, in the face of disasters and this repeat blunders that are being committed, especially with, you know, the terror networks that are deployed, now, you know, they are turning against them. And how could you possibly claim that as a success? The other thing is, you know, with hegemony, that is the Western powers and their allies, involvement in creation and training of these terror operatives in Syria, Iraq, and elsewhere. When I say elsewhere, you know, the terror operations are now widespread. Wherever you see, you come across Daesh, Takfiri, apparently, you know, involved in abductions in Afghanistan, and then they have claimed responsibility in shooting down the Russian airliner in Egypt. And so, you know, this is again, as I said, appears to have this contagion effect. But then, who is responsible for this terror operation to become the worldwide menace? Those who have volunteered and those who have spearheaded this terror campaign to destabilize Syria, and of course that goes for Iraq as well, you know, they are directly responsible. And of course, you know, the funding and financing of terror networks has contributed to a large extent as well. There is also this speculation, and I think it is being presented with a conviction through satellite images and other reports, and that is how the Daesh Takfiri are financing themselves, and it appears that Daesh Takfiri, having taken over the Syrian oil fields, they are trading Syrian oil and generating millions of dollars, and that is also providing for their weapons cache. And again, you know, who are the buyers? Who are the purchases of this illegal crude oil that is being traded by this Daesh Takfiri? Why not, you know, impose sanctions against those who are engaged in this illegitimate trade? And I can tell you, I mean, there are a few names, and one of them is Turkey again. You know, if Turkey is involved in buying oil from Daesh Takfiri from Syria, and that goes for some Western nations as well, and if they are, you know, the buyers of this illegal trade, then should they not be subject to accountability? How about sanctions against them? I mean, there are ways and means to bring this entire terror operation and terrorism to an end. if there is a political will to do so. The other aspect of it is even with the income generated by Daesh Takfiri from this illegal trading of Syrian oil to buyers who are none other than the same powers who are claiming to wage war against Daesh Takfiri. And what about those who are supplying weapons to Daesh Takfiri? Why not go after them as well? Who are the major, why not identify the sources supplying weapons to Daesh Takfiri, enabling this terror network to terrorize people in world capitals at various intervals? And this is only, increasing by the hour. Why not, pursue the sources who are behind weapons supply to Daesh Takfiri? So rather than this unanimous decision at UN Security Council to bomb Syria and Iraq all over again, not that it has not been happening, it has become the only mode of operation: bombing, airstrikes, missiles, and shelling of that country and Iraq as well. But then, they do not want to seek a sensible, non-violent alternatives that are available. Non-violent alternatives. And I just said that, and I spell out again: disarm these terrorists. I mean, if Daesh Takfiri is generating income from illegal trading of Syrian oil, and the buyers are none other than the same powers and allies who are, claiming to be the saviors, the crusaders, all of a sudden, they are the ones who should be brought to notice. And why not sanctions against them if they do not cease to have any ties with these terror networks, whether as buyers of illegal crude oil and any other resources that are obviously stolen from Syria and Iraq, and that goes for Libya as well. And then at the same time, restricting any kind of weapon sales to Daesh Takfiri. These two measures alone can abruptly, I emphasize, I reiterate, these two measures alone can abruptly bring the entire terror network inoperative. This would just simply freeze terror operation. Those who are crying foul, when they are the ones who are the sources, when they are the ones who are the providers, enabling, aiding and abetting terrorism, should it be a surprise to the world with their unwillingness, their reluctance to act upon these measures? They can implement these measures right away, and this in itself would fracture the terror operation. When their real intentions or to accomplish their failed and flawed and this ideology-based mission. No matter whatever sensible solutions are available, they would not consider them, for it is not convenient for them. But then, you know, should the people, innocent people in Syria or anywhere in the world, continue to be the victims of terror? That is what the world needs to debate and deliberate on, and you know, until it is before it is too late. I am Padmini Arhant, representative, divine mission, author and presenter, PadminiArhant.com. Thank you for your attention.